Street in the historic Urbana Cinema and represents 52 professional artists of the Midwest. For more information, visit cinemagallery.cc or follow Cinema Gallery on Instagram. And coming up next is Disability Beat, so stay tuned. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with Dana Johnson, co-creator of the film Spellers. But first, disability news for the week of October 23rd, 2023. The U.S. Department of Labor begins hosting a series of stakeholder engagement sessions as it reviews the Section 14C program utilized by some providers and businesses that pay subminimum wages to people with disabilities. And this is a program that dates back to a law that is almost 100 years old. Government officials have been under pressure to eliminate the subminimum wage employment model, which leaves workers with disabilities earning as little as pennies per hour. In September, the Department of Labor said it would initiate a review of the program, which had been requested by a lot of folks, including disability advocates, the Government Accountability Office, the National Council on Disability, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, and the Labor Department's Advisory Committee on Increasing Competitive Integrated Employment, among many others, according to Taryn Williams, Assistant Secretary of Labor for Disability Employment Policy. The review process has not been outlined, nor has the length of time it will take or an anticipated outcome. The first listening session is scheduled to take place this week on Thursday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Central Time. It is open to the public with registration ending on Wednesday. And that first session will be held virtually. Registration is required no later than Wednesday. For the registration link, you can visit the Facebook page for Disability Beat, and that will be the first thing on the page. The National Football League is releasing a collection of apparel for all 32 pro teams that are adapted for people with disabilities, including hoodies and t-shirts. The adapted items have features including items with buttons up the back so that caregivers can assist with the item after the wearer puts it on, or designed wider neck opening, zippered seams, or magnetic fasteners to make independent dressing easier. Other NFL adaptive gear includes bungees and extended zippers for fans with a more limited range of motion. The pullover hoodies have a zipper at the left side seam that expands the bottom hem when dressing. All of the new products are officially licensed and feature the same type of construction, materials, and graphics found on other NFL products. Football fans can find the full collection on fanatics.com. A report out earlier this year from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, says that 27% of children diagnosed with autism have profound autism, defined as being nonverbal, minimally verbal, or have an IQ of less than 50. Despite that, families of those with significant needs say that their concerns are not being considered by the Interagency Autism Coordinating Committee, a group comprised of government officials and members of the autism community responsible for developing a strategic plan for advising the Secretary of Health and Human Services. The National Council on Severe Autism says that it needs to change. They are asking the IACC to give 30% of every committee meeting to specifically address the needs of people with profound autism and another 30% to people who have an intellectual disability or borderline intellectual disability but don't qualify for profound autism. The requested change may include focusing on medical interventions and residential options for people with behavior concerns or the need for inpatient, outpatient, and crisis intervention programs, according to Jill Escher, president of the National Council on Severe Autism. According to Escher, quote, moving forward to ensure the IACC is properly addressing the needs of those disabled by autism, IACC meetings should very clearly delineate the forms of autism they're addressing with their chosen subject matter and ensure proportionality. The desperate and growing needs of those with profound autism, intellectual disability, and borderline ID deserve full and urgent attention by this committee, end quote. So far, Escher said that the IACC has only given the concerns of families affected by profound autism a bit of lip service, but also said, quote, we haven't seen anything substantial that can help move these fields in promising new directions. Rather, they recapitulate some already well-known ideas and facts with no substantial discussion and certainly without any sense of urgency whatsoever, end quote. More than a third of the public comments submitted prior to the IACC's most recent meeting last week centered on the issues facing children and adults with profound needs. And finally, if you tuned into Disability Beat last week, you heard an interview with Allison Boot, co-coordinator of the upcoming Disability Resource Expo in Champaign. As a reminder, this free event will take place this coming Saturday, October 28th, at Marketplace Mall in Champaign from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., offering resources for people dealing with a wide variety of disabilities, including vision or hearing loss, aging, early childhood intervention, mental health concerns, developmental or intellectual disabilities, and physical disabilities, just to name a few. Speaking from experience, if you need new resources for yourself or your family member with disabilities, you may want to consider attending. For more detailed information, you can visit their website at disabilityresourceexpo.org. And that's the news for this week.
Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today on the phone by Dana Johnson, who is the co-creator of a new film coming out very soon called Spellers. Welcome to the program, Dana.
Thank you so much for having me today. It's going to be wonderful to talk with you.
I'm looking forward to it. So why don't you start by introducing yourself?
Okay. So my name is Dana Johnson. I'm an occupational therapist here in Tampa, Florida, and I am the founder of Speller Center Tampa. So we have two locations, Speller Center Tampa and Speller Center San Diego. And my business partner, Domrie Gavin, who's also in the film and a producer of the film, is located in San Diego. So I had the opportunity about a year ago to participate in this amazing film that documents the lives of eight spellers. And they represent many of my clients that I see in the clinic in Tampa. Who come and parents of all ages, really. That's a question that I get as far as age group, but all ages from about 4.5, 5. My oldest client is 53. And we support communication, reliable communication for non-speaking autism.
Right. So why don't you explain to the listeners when you when you're talking about spellers, what do you mean by that terminology?
So a speller and or typer, because as we may get into in terms of some of the ins and outs of what we actually do, is that we're not teaching these my clients, these individuals, spelling. They know how to spell. That's what we presume when they come into the clinic. But what spelling is we have a letter board with A through Z, and they have practiced their motor skills so frequently, and they have such good motor skills that they can spell out everything that they want to say. And up until now, you know, it hasn't been something that many people think about, because right now high tech, you know, is the predominant way that non-speakers or in unreliable speakers use. So AAC devices, apps on iPads are way more frequent. And so when they come to see me and they see this low-tech stencil board, they're like, have you not heard of communication? Are you living under a rock? Absolutely not, because it's all dependent on the motor skills. And there's a reason why we do that. So that's what we're, when I'm referring to spellers, that's an individual who uses spelled communication as their reliable form of communication.
Okay. And so how did you get connected to this work? Do you have... Usually people who get involved in a particular area, disability related, have that connection from somebody in their family or a job that they've had before. Where does your interest come from?
It's interesting because I grew up as a large family. My mom had eight brothers and sisters, and her youngest sister, who isn't, I mean, she's about 15 years older, 16 years older than me. So, she was in college studying to become an occupational therapist, and she would practice all of her assessments on my sister and I. And I remember vividly what we would do, and I thought it was really, really interesting. And then she ended up opening her own private practice, pediatric occupational therapy clinic. And I knew immediately that that's what I wanted to do. And so I focused my occupational therapy academics on pediatrics and specifically autism. Autism mm-hmm. was something I was introduced to when I worked at a camp, and I was able to support an individual with autism to participate in a week-long camp, and I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. So graduating from college, I went right into the school system, and then from there ended up in a private clinic and then relocated here to Tampa and started out in an outpatient clinic setting, and then been, I guess, about 12 years now that I've had my own private practice here in the Tampa Bay area, and still focusing on autism and really diving into the research. And that's when I did go back to school yet again, and I got my PhD. But it was more that focusing on the family and the family dynamics and how all of that relates to having a child with autism. So my practice has expanded. And then about almost eight years ago now, I was introduced to spelling and spelling to communicate. And that just literally changed the way that I worked with my clients. And in fact, it was a book called Ito in Autism Land. And Ito uses typed and spelled communication as his reliable way to communicate. And he said very explicitly in that book that OT did nothing for me. Mm. And I just stopped right there. I said to myself, I need to read this because I need to learn more. It wasn't like, oh, no, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm like, he is a self-advocate. I need to listen to him. And he said that it wasn't fun. I mean, OT, of course, swinging and jumping in the ball pit. I mean, he loved it. And it gave him, you know, that immediate sensory need that was filled. But then he said the biggest thing for me and many others like myself is that they don't have a body that connects to their brain. And so they're wanting to do things in life, but they can't make that connection, that neuromotor connection. And so it looks like on the outside that they don't want to do things, that they didn't understand, that they don't comprehend, they can't demonstrate what they know. And so it's a brain-body issue and not a cognitive issue. And he said, it wasn't until my mom hired me a trainer that I really started to build those connections for intentional and purposeful movement. And so at that point in time, I immediately changed my clinic setting to now have a treadmill, and we have a barbell, and we have, you know, a bench, and we have weights and dumbbells, and really to focus more on building the intentional movement. And we still, I mean, it's funny because I still have the swing attachments and all of that. And right now there's a TRX band that we use for exercise that's attached to it. So it doubles. But we still, I mean, we still work with younger kids who do need that bottom up regulation support through sensory integration. And we're still all about that. But we really want to focus on more how do we build the intentional movement, because that's what's needed in order to be able to sell, to communicate.
Right.
So that's kind of, yeah, go ahead.
As an occupational therapist, though, then how did you get involved in making a film about this?
Right. So I, myself and Dawn Marie Gavin, as I mentioned her before, we connected, we had connected previously when I was starting a school. So I'm a founder of a school here in Tampa, Invictus Academy, that all of our students spell and type to communicate, and they're receiving age-appropriate academics as well, and then some of them hope to go to college. So I was at a conference with her, and we were introduced then. And we both went our separate ways. She went, she was there because she too was going to start a school and then ended up not doing that. I moved forward with that and then, left, you know, was pulling back from that because I had a wonderful staff and administration to take that on. And I focused more on my clinic, and she called me one day and said, hey, do you want to just do like a week-long camp for parents of spellers and potential spellers that we could support? And at that point in time was when Underestimated, the book by J.B. Hanley and Jamie Hanley, was out. And I knew them as well, Jamie and J.B. And so I said yes, because we're finding that we're, you know, there's all these non-speakers and their families that have come out and they need support, and the waiting lists are just so huge. And so we decided that's what we were going to do. And then literally now we're 2 years later, and we have Spellers, which is our combined business, and then our Speller Centers. And then we were both in the film Spellers. So it's grown very, very quickly, but I was asked by JB and Jamie to be in that film because of what they have all learned, that autism, non-speaking autism, is a neuromotor issue and not a cognitive issue. And in the film, JB says, you know, what if we got it all wrong? What if it's all wrong, what we've known? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say anything about the film because everybody wants to go see it. But it, like I said, it talks about, so I'm really talking about the, you know, neuromotor, the brain-body disconnect, and how that impacts everyone with non-speaking autism, and to start that paradigm shift, to start the mind shift.
Yeah. So is this the film, was it made for people with disabilities and their families? Was it meant to inform the general public? What was the purpose?
It's all of that. And the reason is that we want individuals who do use spelling and typing as communication to invite people that they want to know and have better understanding of their communication method. So it can be for families. It can be, you know, I've had families that have watched it that are like, oh, well, I'm inviting the grandparents because they're not quite understanding all this. Perfect. Mm-hmm. I myself have invited district level administration for our school districts because I think that this is really important for them to see. So I think, you know, everybody in between, this film is going to reach way more than just one group of individuals. And that's what's really, really exciting.
Yeah. So that talks a little bit about what your expectations are. But in the making of this film, were there any things that happened that surprised you?
I think, you know, with the film, there were some, you know, individuals who were not criticizing, but were like, no, this is not what needs to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like everything, there's critics out there. And so we just really wanted to have a well-represented film from all aspects. And it turned out that, you know, there were some that just decided, nope, I don't want to be identified, and it's shown in the film, where they're like, here's my thoughts about it, and I'm happy to speak, but I don't want to be identified.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and I guess it wasn't shocking to me. I guess to answer your question, there really wasn't anything that was like, oh, you know, with that. But then again, it takes a lot for me to be shocked. So I think, you know, more, it was just an amazing journey. I mean, just to now know that it's done and to see people's responses, I didn't realize how, I knew it was going to be big, but I didn't realize that it was going to be this big. And the response has just been overwhelmingly positive, overwhelmingly positive.
So it has opened then.
Yes, yesterday was the big official release date, where it was shown in a number of AMC and Cinemax theaters, but then also through Kinema, which is an online platform where it will stream, and it will be available on Kinema through to the end of this year, where you can host virtual parties. So you can have it at your house, and you can say, this is when I'm going to have it. And you can order it through Kinema. You can have people to your house. You can invite people to your church if you want to have a bigger gathering and show it there. I'm doing another screening on the 21st of May locally here in Tampa area for those who, you know, couldn't make it on the 30th. So they're continuously going to be showings, and then, you know, we hope to get it on a larger platform. And then, you know, if not, down the road on YouTube, or available where it will be on free streaming for everybody, because our goal has always been and will continue to be to get this out to as many people as we can, so that we can give non-speakers a voice.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not surprising to me that you had self-advocates who said, you know, I don't want to be on this, in this film, and, you know, be a subject of this movie. But, you know, there is this existing stigma for people who are non-speaking, who, you know, anybody who communicates differently is looked at as too different to mm-hmm. be a part of the community. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that mm-hmm. will change that perception in some ways.
Absolutely. And I want to clarify that it wasn't a self-advocate that didn't want to be in it. It was an educator who didn't want to be identified as saying that this could possibly be a way that, you know, non-speakers could actually demonstrate their knowledge. Because, you know, when we think about the school system, and I've had a number of my clients have access to using their letterboards and keyboards in the school system, but because the way that it's set up, and we think about it, everybody who has autism, or a student, I should say, that has autism, non-speaking autism, typically will go into an autism class, right, where they don't have access to age-appropriate curriculum,
mm-hmm.
Because we're told that they have, you know, an IQ of 40, let's say. And so when you actually think through all of that, and this is where when I have clients come in, I challenge them in terms of the family to say, let's now look at your son or your daughter through a motor or a movement lens in terms of how their body works, because mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about that, because that's the biggest paradigm shift that I think we have to make. Because when you think about any type of testing, academic testing, psychological testing, any type of testing requires intentional or reliable movement in terms of the brain-body connection. You have to intentionally touch the letter S or intentionally touch the number 2, or, you know, when you're identifying your letters and numbers. Well, if you have a neuromotor issue, you might touch the S, or your body might go and touch the T, or it might touch a different letter. But because you have a motor issue, it's not demonstrating actually what your cognitive ability is. But yet academic testing states that, well, they don't know their numbers or letters. Mm-hmm. And I have families all the time that will say, you know, well, I don't know if they're really going to be able to do this because they can only identify, you know, a 14 out of 26 letters. Like, so I just don't think they're going to be able to do this. And mm-hmm. then I just ask, I'm like, well, how are they demonstrating that? And sure enough, you know, they're having to point, or they're having to speak, or they're having to write, or all of our communication, every single way that all of us communicate is through a motor or intentional movement. Every single thing, if you think about it.
Yeah.
And so when you have a neuromotor disability, that's a problem. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. And so that's why teaching the motor skills to be able to spell and type to communicate is actually a reliable way that they will be able to communicate and have a conversation, not just asking and, you know, get your wants, like, I want, you know, juice. This is, let's engage in a conversation with a peer, which is really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds really fascinating. Looking forward to seeing it. So where can people find more information then?
Yes. So if you go to spellers.com, that is our main website. And then at the top, you can navigate. That will show all of our different resources, the different centers, how you can set up a consultation, links to the movie, how to join the movement, and then also how to, if you go to Spellers, you can go to spellersthemovie.com. That's also another website. You can get through ours. And you can see the listings on where you can watch. So there's already a number of virtual screenings that are happening. And so if you want to either do that, or you can go through Kinema and organize your own screening party, which would be even more fun.
That sounds great. I congratulate you on completing this film. And, you know, who knows what could be coming up next for you and the community of spellers out there. It would be awesome.
We're excited. Thank you so much, Vicki.
Sure. Thank you. Dana Johnson, co-creator of Spellers. Thanks for tuning in today, everybody. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
No, I'll stay. Down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Coming up next is Food Sleuth Radio. Stay tuned for that and other great programming here on WEFT Community Radio all evening long. And again, thanks for your support during our fall pledge drive. I hope that if you didn't make a donation, that you will. Just go to our website at weft.org and click the Donate Now button. Thanks so much for your help and enjoy the rest of your evening.